Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
Lots to talk about.
Tech Guide.
It's a very well-rounded product, combines great design, great technology, lots of excellent features.
Tech Guide.
This is why Samsung has seen a huge surge, why their profits are up.
Keeping you updated and educated, this is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is not an ultrabook. If you're looking for something small, slim and lightweight, then you need to look elsewhere.
Tech Guide.
Probably one of the most impressive little devices I've seen in quite a while.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Hello and welcome to Tech Guide, episode 71. We had a week off last week. We're actually still overseas on holiday, but we thought we'd bring you the very latest episode, the podcast that keeps you updated and educated about the latest consumer technology. On this week's show, we're going to look at Vodafone's plans to double monthly data allowances. We're also going to look at the new FAA rules regarding portable devices on aircraft. We're also going to check out LG's entry into the tablet market, review the iPad Air, and also look at Telstra's new 4G hotspot and the new LiveScribe 3 smart pen. And it's all brought to you by Netgear, Australia's number one Wi-Fi brand. Lots to get through, so let's jump right in. Well, Vodafone have really put up the dukes against Telstra and Optus this week by announcing they're going to be doubling the data amounts on their popular month-to-month and 12 and 24-month plans. Now, this is a bold move. They've thrown down the gauntlet here, trying to attract customers back to the brand. We remember that time where Vodafone was going through a little bit of trouble and were losing customers. But they've really made a remarkable comeback. They've improved their network. They're offering great customer service. And this latest move to double the data allowances on their plans, I think, is going to be a real enticement, not only to keep Vodafone customers, but also to attract new ones. Now, anyone who takes out a plan on a $60 12 or 20-month plan between now and January 3, for example, the existing 1.5 gigabyte data allowance jumps to 3 gigabytes. If you want to go up into the plans, the top of the line there is the Vodafone Red 100 plan, which comes already with 5 gig of data. That jumps to 10 gigabytes, which is a huge amount. And you compare that to the Optus and the Telstra plans, that data allowance just is nowhere near it. But it's also available for people on month-to-month plans as well. So the SIM-only $45 plan comes with 1.5 gig, but that jumps up to 3 if you've got an $85 SIM-only plan. So SIM-only plan is if you have your existing smartphone. You can then increase your 5 gig included data up to 10 gig. So that's 85 SIM-only plan. So you have to have your own smartphone. But I think a very bold move here. Vodafone have very cleverly done a comparison table, which I've published on my story on Tech Guide for anyone who's thinking of joining or renewing a contract. I think if you're an existing Vodafone customer, you have to actually update your plan to qualify for this double data allowance. But really interesting that Vodafone have chosen to come out fighting. I really respect that. There's a very aggressive plan on Vodafone's part. Their 4G network, we've heard nothing but good things about it. So the customer experience is really improving. So if you're a Vodafone customer or thinking about becoming a Vodafone customer, you're going to get a very, very interesting bonus of double the data. You want to read more about that and also take a look at those tables and the amount of data and pricing that goes along with it. You can check that out at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Well, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm actually overseas at the moment. I've been travelling through New York. I'm actually in Hawaii at the moment. But one thing that I've been doing is catching a lot of planes. So I've been flying a fair bit. And one thing that we love to take on board the plane is our iPad, our e-reader, our laptops, smartphones, of course. And generally, the rules around those products were they had to be turned off for takeoff and landing. And the airlines have given us a variety of reasons why that needs to be the case. Things from interfering with the navigational equipment to wanting to have your complete attention during takeoff and landing. But now the FAA, that's the Federal Aviation Administration here in the US, have ruled that there is really no harm in using the smaller devices like smartphones, tablets and e-readers at all stages of the flight, including takeoff and landing. So now if you're on board and you're maybe watching a video or reading a book, maybe listening to some music on your device, now you can actually use that device gate to gate. So there's no need to turn it off, takeoff and landing, which will be a welcome change for a lot of passengers who love to take their devices to keep themselves occupied during the flight. But there will be some restrictions, though, on the use of those products. For example, with the smartphone, use of smartphones, they do have to be in the airplane mode, air flight mode, whatever it happens to be called on your particular device. So the cellular capacity of the device has to be disabled. So there's no making and receiving calls, things like that. But if it is in airplane mode, you can still watch your videos, play your games, use your apps. I think Alec Baldwin was a recent example where he got in trouble by the flight attendants because he didn't want to finish his game of Words with Friends. Under the old rules, that got him in trouble. Under the new rules, he'd be okay to keep playing. So good news for frequent travellers there. But there are some restrictions, though, to obviously larger devices like laptop computers. They still have to be stowed until the seatbelt sign's turned off. So when you reach cruising altitude, you are more than welcome to get out your laptop and get to work. But for all those other devices, your iPads, your tablets, your smartphones, iPhones, Kindles, e-readers, they can be used start to finish. You'll notice all these rulings rolling out across various airlines around the world in the coming months. I was traveling American Airlines, and the flight from New York to Dallas, they said that, yeah, we're free to use our devices, takeoff and landing. So the changes are already taking place. That's good news for frequent travelers. You're listening to Tech Guide. Well, LG have been a very busy company of late. Not only have they released the new G2 smartphone, which we'll talk about in a moment, they've also entered the tablet market, which is very interesting. They've had a really good run of form lately, I have to say. The new G-Pad 8.3 is a brand new tablet that inherits some of the features of its smartphone cousins, I call them in my story. The device has an 8.3-inch full high-definition screen. It's got IPS, that's in-plane switching, which means it's viewable from a number of angles. It's got a 1.7 gigahertz quad-core processor and a powerful 4600 milliamp battery. Now, this is LG's first tablet device, and it's interesting the size they chose because it's 8.3 inches. So that sits almost in the middle of the 7-inch and 10-inch tablet markers. Now, as we all know, 7-inch, very popular, the iPad mini, Nexus 7, a lot of devices that size. Go up to the 10, you got the iPad Air, all these other devices, Samsung Note, all the 10.1, all these other products. But there really isn't anything in that 8.3, 8.5-inch space. So LG have kind of done a in-the-middle selection here for an in-between choice, I've called it, for their screen size selection, which I think is really interesting because for those people who can't decide, do I get a 7, do I get a 10? Well, here's something that's almost right in between. The device itself is 21.7 centimeters long, 12.7 centimeters wide, just 8.3 millimeters thick, and it weighs 338 grams. Now, as I mentioned, it does inherit a lot of features from the G2, which is a smartphone from LG that we've also reviewed on Tech Guide. The G2, what's remarkable about it is the fact that it's kind of taken a bit of a design change. It's really gone outside the square with the design, and namely the button placement. When you look at a smartphone normally, you see that the buttons are on the side, they're maybe on top, but LG with the G2 have actually removed all the buttons from the sides of the device and actually placed them on the back. So there's your on-off sleep switch, and there's your volume up and down keys. Now, when you think of the way you naturally hold your smartphone, whether you're left or right-handed, your fingers are, one or two of your fingers are actually going to be resting on the back of the product. So this is a natural way we hold our device anyway. So being able to then interact with the product, turn it off and on, to turn the volume up, take a selfie, whatever you need to do, it's made a little bit easier with the G2. What other advantage that offers, so removing the buttons from the side of the product, offers a number of other advantages. The first one, and the best one, is the ability to create a bigger screen in a regular size space. So when you take a look at the G2, you'll notice that it doesn't look any bigger than the Galaxy S4, HTC One, but what the G2 has is a 5.2-inch screen where normally you could only fit a 4.8 or a 5-inch screen. So that's really clever on their part. Another really impressive part of the G2, I have to say, and you can read my full review at Tech Guide, is the battery life. What they've done is they've made every use of the space inside. So they've got what they call a step design battery. So rather than, because of the curved design of the back of the product, the battery can actually fill more space with this new step design. And the result is a battery life that is remarkable. The other really impressive thing about the G2 is its processor. This device's got a Qualcomm Snapdragon 600 1.9 gigahertz quad-core processor, and it is really fast. It's got it's laptop quality performance, computer performance in a smartphone. So as a result, the Android 4.2.2 Jelly Bean operating system is really fast. Apps open almost instantly. It's also a 4G device. So that's speed, as I said in my review, should be this device's middle name. If you want to read more about the LG G-Pad 8.3 and the G2 smartphone, you can do that at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Finnick.
Well, the Tech Guide podcast is proudly brought to you by Netgear, Australia's number one Wi-Fi brand. Well, it's coming up to summer, and I'm sure you'd want to stream your music from the backyard barbecue or the pool this year. Well, now you can. You can enjoy improved Wi-Fi coverage on your Wi-Fi devices like tablets and smartphones. We're taking these all around our house, whether it's in the backyard, by the pool, upstairs in the bedroom. Now you can enjoy greater Wi-Fi coverage with Netgear's dual-band Wi-Fi range extender. The WN3500RP will boost dual-band Wi-Fi to the backyard or upstairs bedroom and wirelessly stream music to your connected audio system with AirPlay, if you're using the iPhone or the iPad, or on Android devices using the Netgear Genie app and DLNA. You can extend that Wi-Fi coverage, use your devices anywhere. You can get Wi-Fi where you want with Netgear. If you want to know more, get over to netgear.com.au/Wi-Fi.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Finney. Tech Guide.
Well, let's kick off the Tech Guide reviews with the one and only iPad Air. Now, it was released while I was actually in New York. So I decided, even though Australia, or because of the time difference, get their devices a lot earlier than people here in the US, I thought, well, I need to... I normally go to the George Street store in Sydney to attend these events where, you know, the iPhones and iPads go on sale. There's people lining up and cheering and everyone getting into the store to buy their product. Well, I thought I'd do something different this year. I was in New York, and I actually went to the Fifth Avenue store. That's that iconic store with the huge glass cube, the spiral staircase that leads down to the store. And I was greeted with similar scenes as I'm used to seeing in George Street in Sydney, and that was people lining up. The line went up and back around these bollards, up the street. It was a similar scene to what we see in Australia. And the other thing was that it was raining. So these people are waiting in the rain this particular morning. Well, when all was said and done, same thing. People streamed in the store, a lot of cheering and clapping and happy customers walking out of the store. Well, we got our hands on the device as well. And we have to say the iPad Air is a massive improvement even over last year's model. Now, the biggest change you'll probably notice is, of course, the design. The sides of the screen are now a lot thinner. Looks a lot like the iPad Mini. So the frame around the screen, especially on either side of the display, is a lot thinner. So thin, in fact, so it's made the device a lot narrower. So narrow that I can actually grip the device in my hand. So I don't know if I've got big hands, average size hands, or what, but if you want to have a look at the photo on Tech Guide, that is actually my hand not only checking out the front, the back, but also holding it in my hand. You can see my thumb and three of my fingers peeking out from the other side, just to prove that I'm actually holding the device. Now, apart from the design changes, the look of it, it's lighter now. It's now as thin as the iPad Mini. The iPad Mini with Retina display will be out very shortly. But it is just looking at it without even holding it in your hand, you can tell there's been a lot of work done. The frames either side are 43% narrower than the previous designs, as I mentioned. And it's also the same thickness, that's 7.5 millimeters, as the iPad Mini. But the performance is really where it's improved, the new A7 processor. It's a 64-bit processor that really does make a noticeable difference to performance. And by that, I mean apps jump open straight away. Scrolling is really smooth. Whether you're scrolling through a long list of emails or watching a video, it is noticeably snappier, as I said in my review. One thing, though, you'll get with this year's iPad is a lot of free apps. And the free apps that are included are Apple's own apps. iPhoto, iMovie, Pages, Numbers, Keynote, GarageBand. These now preloaded on the device for free. Now, the iPad was already a considerable draw card for users. And now having these included apps on board as well really makes it even more compelling to buy the iPad Air. So you can really customize the device to suit whatever task you need. I've been using Pages to write while I'm out on the road, while I've been away on holidays for Tech Guide. But that's a huge bonus for people who haven't used those apps. They can actually, they're quite powerful. And Pages is the Word equivalent. Numbers is like the Excel equivalent. Keynote is like the PowerPoint equivalent. So you can see from that, and they are compatible. You can save, you can open a Numbers document in Excel and vice versa. So if you want to have that compatibility, you can. Battery life on the iPad Air has also been improved. Even though that's what's really impressive about the iPad Air, it's smaller, it's lighter, it's thinner, but it is faster, and it's also got a longer battery life. Like Apple quote their battery life for the iPad Air at being around about 10 hours. From our observations and our use of the product, it's actually more than 12 hours. So they've actually undersold the battery life on the iPad Air. So, that's good news. The iPad has always had great battery life, but the iPad Air has now taken it to the very next level. If you want to read my full review, you can do that at techguide.com.au.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Tech Guide.
Keeping you updated and educated.
Now, if you're like me, you really need to be connected on the move. And the good news is that Telstra has actually released a brand new 4G hotspot to keep us connected at an even faster speed. Now, this device is called the Telstra Wi-Fi 4G Advanced. It's a Wi-Fi hotspot. It's got a color screen, so it connects to the 4G network, then creates a little mini Wi-Fi hotspot for you to connect up to 10 devices. So if you're on the go like me, you've got your laptop, you've got your smartphone, you've got your tablet, and you want to connect all of those devices to 4G. Well, now you can with this new device. It's got a 2.4-inch color screen, so it tells you, that screen can tell you things like the amount of data you've used, the name of your network, number of products connected, and how much battery you've got left. Now, speaking of battery, the new Wi-Fi 4G Advanced hotspot has a 10-hour battery life, which is that's excellent, especially for these road warriors, people on the move that need to be connected all the time. That's probably one of the best new features of this product, I have to say. But another advantage is the fact that you're using the Telstra 4G network. The advanced part of the Wi-Fi 4G advanced device utilizes the new LTE advanced technology that actually can bring spectrum bands together to carry even more data, so create even more bandwidth for customers. So you're going to get good upload speeds, great download speeds, and it's going to give you also the best available network wherever you are, whether it's 4G Category 4 or 3G dual channel, which is still quite fast. It's also got dual band Wi-Fi, so you've got a 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz band to use while you're on the go. The Telstra 4G Wi-Fi, it's available on a 24-month plan, $6 a month on the $50 Telstra mobile broadband plan, and with that, you get 8 gigabytes of data per month. That's pretty good value, especially if you're out on the road, you need to be connected on the go. You want to read the full review and check out some pictures features of the Telstra 4G advanced Wi-Fi hotspot. You can do that at techguide.com.au. The next product we're going to talk about in our reviews is the LiveScribe 3. This is a smart pen, the latest version of this smart pen. Now, I have to say, we've been fans of the LiveScribe device for a few years now, and we've seen it go through various iterations. And basically what it is, it's a smart pen that allows you to record your notes. So you've got a special notepad, and everything you write, the pen remembers. So it can make a digital copy of those notes. The old version used to keep that on the pen, and you could transfer that later. It could also record audio while you're writing as well. So if I'm writing some notes and I'm listening to someone talking, I can refer back to those notes. I can click on a note that I was writing at that particular time, and it will take me back to that particular part of the audio. That's the power of LiveScribe. Well, LiveScribe 3 has actually taken quite a shift. It's actually introduced a new way of accomplishing what I've just described. And with LiveScribe 3, the very latest version that was released last week, what it does now, it requires it to be paired to an iPhone or an iPad. Now, there is a free app that now runs on the iPhone or iPad. It's a free iOS 7 app, so you need iOS 7 and above. And the LiveScribe 3 pen then pairs with the device using Bluetooth. Now, you still need your notepad, so the special notepad with the little micro dots on it for you to write your notes. And you'll see, with this new method, it does create a very interesting scenario. Now, before, when you used to write your notes, you'd have to upload the digital version later. With LiveScribe 3, it happens in real time. If you've paired your iPad with the LiveScribe 3 pen, you will see on the app, as you're writing your notes, those notes appearing almost in real time on the iPad screen. It's like a ghost. I've described it as like a ghost writing on your iPad exactly what you're writing on the notebook. It is actually very impressive. And now, the advantage of that is that right from the get-go, your notes are being digitized. So rather than you having to digitize them later, to create a digital version after you're done, it's doing it on the fly. Now, the other advantage of involving the iPhone and the iPad is that it makes use of the device's microphone, which are known to be very good, very high quality. So not only can you still take your notes and share them and save them digitally, you can also still record audio at the same time. Now, when you want to refer back to those notes, you don't click on the pad anymore with the pen or the notebook. You click on the writing on the LiveScribe app. So the LiveScribe app with audio attached is called a pencast. So once you touch that, you can hear the audio that was recorded at that particular time. I've used this a number of times during interviews. So say I've interviewed somebody, I'm taking several notes during the, say, 10 or 15 minute interview. If I've written a particularly interesting note, I can still click on that on my iPad screen or my iPhone, click on that particular word and hear exactly what was said at that time when I took that note. That still offers that power, but it also involves the iPad and the iPhone. Now, the downside of that situation is you've got extra devices involved. You have to have your iPad with your smart pen or your iPhone, but chances are you're going to have them with you anyway. So that's not too bad. Before the LiveScribe pen, and I've got to say, those earlier versions are still available if you still like that particular version. The older version did everything on its own. It had its own little display, recorded audio, saved all the notes. It all did that by itself, but those versions are still available. But what I like about the app is the fact that it can turn your written handwriting into text. So basically what it can do is look at the feed and you just swipe across each particular note and it then recognizes your handwriting and turns it into text. So that way you can create an editable document. Rather than you having to type something into the iPad, you can actually now write it on your notepad. The iPad then does the heavy lifting, turns it into editable text, so recognize your handwriting and creates text from there. So and from there, of course, you can still access your notes from anywhere through iCloud, Dropbox, Evernote, whatever way you want to share and store your notes, you can still do it. The pen itself, it's got a bit more of a rounder look. There's a central ring that turns the device on and off. So once you twist it on, it immediately then pairs to the iPad or iPhone and creates that connection for you to get working. Now, Android users, you're going to get a version of this in sometime in early 2014 is what I'm told. But the LiveScribe 3 Smart Pen is available now. It's $199 for the package that includes the pen and the starter notebook. And if you want to go up to the Pro Edition, that's $265, and that comes with a leather folio. So you can take the pen and the pad and a nice little leather-bound notebook there. And that also comes, the Pro Edition also comes with a 12-month Evernote subscription, and that's $265. You want to read my full review? You can do that at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Well, the help desk today is actually going to come from my own experiences here in the US. And I was in New York for nearly 2 weeks. And getting around New York, if you're not a New Yorker, getting around New York can be quite difficult. You can choose to do the map, to get the map out and find your way around. And I use the subway a lot. But what I found was that Google Maps was my best friend. Google Maps does a number of things that I didn't realize until I was over there traveling. Now, what I was doing, whenever I needed to get somewhere, all I had to do was open up Google Maps, type in the address or the cross street, say I had to get to Broadway and 59th Street. I'd simply type that into Google Maps. It would then give me a reference, yep, do you mean New York City? I say yes, and it would then not only locate that spot where I want to go, it would also know where I am. And it would give me then options if I wanted driving directions, if I wanted public transport directions or walking directions, it would let me know. And it would also allow me to use turn by turn if I want to. For example, I used it one day. We were down in the financial district and we wanted to go over to the Brooklyn Bridge to go over to Brooklyn. It gave me walking directions to find the bridge, walk over the bridge and find the particular place we wanted to go. In this case, we wanted to go to Grimaldi's Pizza, famous pizza place in Brooklyn. And it gave me turn by turn directions precisely, accurately, and I got there in no time. So, but what if you say you're traveling on the subway, what it does, it gives you the nearest station. It tells you what time the trains are coming. It tells you how many stops that are required. So your stop is, say, at Times Square, 42nd Street, which that's in 14 stations. You need to find the Rector Street station, and there's a train coming in 4 minutes. That's how accurate the service was. It even knew when stations weren't operational, like the Rector Street station, which is down where I was staying there in Battery Park. It knew when that station was shut, so it directed me to the previous station or another line. So there are six or seven different train lines that Google Maps can direct you around. So if you're traveling, it is such a great tool to use. Not only does it give you train directions, bus directions, it gives you times. It really is a handy tool if you're traveling. So if you're heading overseas with your smartphone, buy a US SIM card. I did. I bought an AT&T $60 prepaid SIM that gave me unlimited talk, unlimited text. I was traveling with my wife so we could call each other as often as we wanted. We can also send international text messages as often as we wanted and 2 gigabytes of data. And that was plenty of data to use not only for Google Maps, but I also used it as a hotspot for my other devices, my tablet, my laptop, while I was there on the go. Google Maps, it is your best friend when you're traveling. And that's another show, Tech Guide Episode 71. Anything that we've spoken about on the show, you can read about at techguide.com.au. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to get in touch, feel free at info@techguide.com.au. You can also send us a question to our Tech Guide forum, and you may be heard on the help desk on next week's episode. You can also use my VoiceBite app. So if you want to record your question, 15 seconds. The very latest version of VoiceBite is actually out right now, version 1.2. The biggest update for that app now is the fact you can send and receive private messages. So you can send one-on-one or group audio messages. But you can also send me a VoiceBite question, 15 seconds long, put Ask Stephen in the clip title. That's all we've got time for this week. As we always say, stay safe and stay connected.